16. Rapped 3 times. For in this comes the lesson. From Oathbringer, Preface. A legend rested on the stone slab before Dalinar, a weapon pulled from the ancient mists of time, and said to have been forged during the shadow days by the hand of God himself. The blade of the assassin in white, claimed by Caladan Stormblessed during their clash above the storm. Upon cursory inspection, it was indistinguishable from an ordinary shard blade. Elegant, relatively small in that it was barely 5 feet long, it was thin and curved like a tusk. It had patterns only at the base of the blade, near the hilt. He'd lit it with 4 diamond bromes, placed at the corners of the altar-like stone slab. This small room had no strata or paintings on the walls, so the stormlight lit only him and that alien blade. It did have one oddity. There was no gemstone. Gemstones were what allowed men to bond to shard blades, often affixed at the pommel, though occasionally at the spot where hilt met blade, the gem would flash when you first touched it, initiating the process. Keep the blade with you for a week, and the blade became yours, dismissible and returnable in time with your heartbeat. This blade didn't have one. Dalinar hesitantly reached out and rested his fingers on its silvery length. It was warm to the touch, like something alive. It doesn't scream when I touch it, he noted. The knights, the Stormfather said in his head, broke their oaths. They abandoned everything they'd sworn, and in so doing killed their Spren. Other blades are the corpses of those Spren, which is why they scream at your touch. This weapon, instead, was made directly from Honor's soul, then given to the heralds. It is also the mark of an oath, but a different type, and does not have the mind to scream on its own. And Shardplate? Dalinar asked. Related, but different, the Stormfather rumbled. You haven't spoken the oaths required to know more. You cannot break oaths, Dalinar said, fingers still resting on the honor blade. Right? I cannot. What of the thing we fight, Odium, the origin of the Voidbringers and their Spren? Can he break oaths? No, the Stormfather said. He is far greater than I, but the power of ancient Adenalsium permeates him and controls him. Odium is a force like pressure, gravitation, or the movement of time. These things cannot break their own rules, nor can he. Dalinar tapped the honor blade, a fragment of honor's own soul, crystallized into metallic form. In a way, the death of their god gave him hope. For if honor had fallen, surely Odium could as well. In visions, honor had left Dalinar with a task. Vex Odium. Convince him that he can lose and appoint a champion. He will take that chance instead of risking defeat again, as he has suffered so often. This is the best advice I can give you. I've seen that the enemy is preparing a champion, Dalinar said. A dark creature with red eyes and 9 shadows. Will Honor's suggestion work? Can I make Odium agree to a decisive contest between me and that champion? Of course Honor's suggestion would work, the Stormfather said. He spoke it. I mean, Dalinar said, why would it work? Why would this Odium ever agree to a contest of champions? It seems too momentous a matter to risk on something so small and inferior as the prowess and will of men. Your enemy is not a man like you, the Stormfather replied, voice rumbling, thoughtful, even frightened. He does not age, he feels, he is angry, but this does not change, and his rage does not cool. Epochs can pass, and he will remain the same. To fight directly might coax out forces that could hurt him, as he has been hurt before. Those scars do not heal. To pick a champion, then lose, will only cost him time. He has that in plenitude. He still will not agree easily, but it is possible he will agree. If presented with the option in the right moment, the right way, then he will be bound. And we win time, the Stormfather said, which though dross to him is the most valuable thing a man can have.
Dalinar slipped the honor blade off the slab. At the side of the room, a shaft cut into the ground. 2 feet wide, it was one of many strange holes, corridors, and hidden corners they'd found in the Tower City. This one was probably part of a sewage system. Judging by the rust on the edges of the hole, there had once been a metal pipe here connecting the stone hole in the floor to one in the ceiling. One of Navani's primary concerns was figuring out how all this worked. For now, they'd gotten by using wooden frames to turn certain large communal rooms with ancient baths into privies. Once they had more stormlight, their soulcasters could deal with the waste as they'd done in the war camps. Navani found the system inelegant. Communal privies with sometimes long lines made for an inefficient city, and she claimed that these tubes indicated a widespread piping and sanitation system. It was exactly the sort of large-scale civic project that engaged her. He'd never known anyone to get as excited by sewage as Navani Kolin. For now, this tube was empty. Dalinar knelt and lowered the sword into the hole, sliding it into a stone sheath he'd cut in the side. The upper lip of the hole shielded the protruding hilt from sight. You'd have to reach down and feel in the hole to find the honor blade. He stood up, then gathered his spheres and made his way out. He hated leaving it there, but he could think of nothing safer. His rooms didn't feel secure enough yet. He had no vault, and a crowd of guards would only draw attention. Beyond Kaladin, Navani, and the Stormfather himself, nobody even knew that Dalinar had this. If he masked his movements, there was virtually no chance of the blade being discovered in this vacant portion of the tower.
"What will you do with it?" the Stormfather asked as Dalinar entered the empty corridors. "It is a weapon beyond parallel, the gift of a god. With it you would be a windrunner, unoathed, and more. More that men do not understand and cannot. Like a herald, nearly." "All the more reason," Dalinar said, "to think very carefully before using it. Though I wouldn't mind if you kept an eye on it for me." The Stormfather actually laughed. "You think I can see all things?"
"I kind of assumed. The map we made.
I see what is left out in the storms, and that darkly. I am no god, Dalinar Kolin. No more than your shadow on the wall is you."
Dalinar reached the steps downward, then wound around and around, holding a broom for light. If Captain Kaladin didn't return soon, the honor blade would provide another means of windrunning, a way to get to Thalen City or Aesir at speed, or to get Elikar's team to Kolinar. The Stormfather had also confirmed it could work oath gates, which might prove handy. Dalinar reached more inhabited sections of the tower, which bustled with movement. A chef's assistants hauling supplies from the storage dump right inside the tower gates, a couple of men painting lines on the floor to guide, families of soldiers in a particularly wide hallway, sitting on boxes along the wall and watching children roll wooden spheres down a slope into a room that had probably been another bath. Life. Such an odd place to make a home. Yet they'd transformed the barren, shattered plains into one. This tower wouldn't be so different, assuming they could keep farming operations going on the shattered plains, and assuming they had enough stormlight to keep those oath gates working. He was the odd man out, holding a sphere. Guards patrolled with lanterns, the cooks worked by lamp oil, but their stores were starting to run low. The women watching children and darning socks used only the light of a few windows along the wall here. Dalinar passed near his rooms. Today's guard, spearman from Bridge 13, waited outside. He waved for them to follow him.
"Is all well, Bright Lord?" one asked, catching up quickly.
He spoke with a slow drawl, a Koran accent, from near the Sunmaker Mountains in central Alethkar.
"Fine," Dalinar said tersely, trying to determine the time. How long had he spent speaking with the Stormfather?
"Good, good," the guard said, spear held lightly to his shoulder. "Wouldn't want anything to have happened to you while you were out, alone, in the corridors, when you said nobody should be going about alone."
Dalinar eyed the man. Clean-shaven, he was a little pale for an Alethi and had dark brown hair. Dalinar vaguely thought the man had shown up among his guards several times during the last week or so. He liked to roll a sphere across his knuckles in what Dalinar found to be a distracting way.
"Your name?" Dalinar asked as they walked.
"Ryle," the man said. "Bridge 13.
The soldier raised a hand and gave a precise salute, so careful it could have been given by one of Dalinar's finest officers, except he maintained the same lazy expression.
"Well, Sergeant Ryle, I was not alone," Dalinar said. "Where did you get this habit of questioning officers?"
"It isn't a habit if you only do it once, Bright Lord."
"And you've only ever done it once?"
"To you?"
"To anyone."
"Well," Ryle said, "those don't count, Bright Lord. I'm a new man, reborn in the bridge crews."
"Lovely. Well, Ryle, do you know what time it is? I have trouble telling in these storming corridors."
"You could use the clock device Brightness Navani sent you, sir," Ryle said. "I think that's what they're for, you know."
Dalinar affixed him with another glare.
"Wasn't questioning you, sir," Ryle said. "It wasn't a question. See..."
Dalinar finally turned and stalked back down the corridor to his rooms. Where was that package Navani had given him? He found it on an end table and from inside it removed a leather bracer somewhat like what an archer would wear. It had two clock faces set into the top. One showed the time with three hands, even seconds, as if that mattered. The other was a storm clock which could be set to wind down to the next projected high storm.
"How do they get it all so small?" he wondered, shaking the device.
Set into the leather, it also had a pain reel, a gemstone fabrial that would take pain from him if he pressed his hand on it. Navani had been working on various forms of pain-related fabrials for use by surgeons and had mentioned using him as a test subject. He strapped the device to his forearm, right above his wrist. It felt conspicuous there, wrapping around the outside of his uniform sleeve, but it had been a gift. In any case, he had an hour until his next scheduled meeting. Time to work out some of his restless energy. He collected his two guards, then made his way down a level to one of the larger chambers near where he housed his soldiers. The room had black and gray strata on the walls and was filled with men training. They all wore Kolin blue, even if just an armband. For now, both Light Eyes and Dark practiced in the same chamber, sparring in rings with padded cloth mats. As always, the sounds and smells of sparring warmed Dalinar. Sweeter than the scent of flatbread baking was that of oiled leather. More welcoming than the sound of flutes was that of practice swords rapping against one another. Wherever he was and whatever station he obtained, a place like this would always be home. He found the swordmasters assembled at the back wall, seated on cushions and supervising their students. Save for one notable exception, They all had squared beards, shaved heads, and simple, open-fronted robes that tied at the waist. Dalinar owned ardents who were experts in all manner of specialties, and per tradition, any man or woman could come to them and be apprenticed in a new skill or trade. The swordmasters, however, were his pride. 5 of the 6 men rose and bowed to him. Dalinar turned to survey the room again. The smell of sweat, the clang of weapons. They were the signs of preparation. The world might be in chaos, but Alethkar prepared.
Not Alethkar, he thought. Eurythriu. My kingdom.
Storms, it was going to be difficult to accustom himself to that. He would always be a Lethi, but once Elokar's proclamation came out, Alethkar would no longer be his. He still hadn't figured out how to present that fact to his armies. He wanted to give Navani and her scribes time to work out the exact legalities.
You've done well here, Dalinar said to Kelerand, one of the swordmasters. Ask Ivis if she'd look at expanding the training quarters into adjacent chambers. I want you to keep the troops busy. I'm worried about them getting restless and starting more fights.
It will be done, Brightlord, Kelerand said, bowing.
I'd like a spar myself, Dalinar said.
I shall find someone suitable, Brightlord.
What about you, Kelerand? Dalinar said.
The swordmaster bested Dalinar 2 out of 3 times, and though Dalinar had given up delusions of someday becoming the better swordsman, he was a soldier, not a duelist. He liked the challenge.
I will, Kelerand said stiffly, of course do as my High Prince commands, though if given a choice, I shall pass. With all due respect, I don't feel that I would make a suitable match for you today.
Dalinar glanced toward the other standing swordmasters, who lowered their eyes. Swordmaster Ardens weren't generally like their more religious counterparts. They could be formal at times, but you could laugh with them. Usually. They were still Ardens, though.
Very well, Dalinar said. Find me someone to fight.
Though he'd intended it only as a dismissal of Kelerand, the other 4 joined him, leaving Dalinar. He sighed, leaning back against the wall, and glanced to the side. One man still lounged on his cushion. He wore a scruffy beard and clothing that seemed an afterthought. Not dirty, but ragged, belted with rope.
Not offended by my presence, Zael? Dalinar asked. I'm offended by everyone's presence. You're no more revolting than the rest, Mr. High Prince.
Dalinar settled down on a stool to wait.
You didn't expect this? Zael said, sounding amused. No, I thought, well, they're fighting ardents, swordsmen, soldiers at heart. You're dangerously close to threatening them with a decision, Brightlord. Choose between God and their High Prince. The fact that they like you doesn't make the decision easier, but more difficult. Their discomfort will pass, Dalinar said. My marriage, though it seems dramatic now, will eventually be a mere trivial note in history.
Perhaps.
You disagree?
Every moment in our lives seems trivial, Zael said. Most are forgotten, while some, equally humble, become the points upon which history pivots. Like white on black.
White on black? Dalinar asked.
Figure of speech. I don't really care what you did, High Prince. Light-eyed self-indulgence or serious sacrilege, either way it doesn't affect me. But there are those who are asking how far you're going to end up straying.
Dalinar grunted. Honestly, had he expected Zael, of all people, to be helpful? He stood up and began to pace, annoyed at his own nervous energy. Before the Ardens could return with someone for him to duel, he stalked back into the middle of the room looking for soldiers he recognized. Men who wouldn't feel inhibited sparring with a High Prince. He eventually located one of General Kahl's sons. Not the Shardbearer, Captain Hallam Kahl, but the next oldest son, a beefy man with a head that had always seemed a little too small for his body. He was stretching after some wrestling matches.
Auriton, Dalinar said. You ever sparred with a high prince?
The younger man turned, then immediately snapped to attention.
Sir?
No need for formality. I'm just looking for a match.
I'm not equipped for a proper duel, Bright Lord, he said. Give me some time.
No need, Dalinar said. I'm fine for a wrestling match. It's been too long.
Some men would rather not spar with a man as important as Dalinar for fear of hurting him. Kahl had trained his sons better than that. The young man grinned, displaying a prominent gap in his teeth.
Fine with me, Bright Lord. But I'll have you know, I've not lost a match in months.
Good, Dalinar said. I need a challenge.
The swordmasters finally returned as Dalinar, stripped to the waist, was pulling on a pair of sparring leggings over his undershorts. The tight leggings came down only to his knees. He nodded to the swordmasters, ignoring the gentlemanly light eyes they'd sought out for him to spar, and stepped into the wrestling ring with Auriton Kahl. His guards gave the swordmasters a kind of apologetic shrug, then Ryle counted off a start to the wrestling match. Dalinar immediately lunged forward and slammed into Kahl, grabbing him under the arms, struggling to hold his feet back and force his opponent off balance. The wrestling match would eventually go to the ground, but you wanted to be the one who controlled when and how that happened. There was no grabbing the leggings in a traditional Veja match, and of course no grabbing hair, so Dalinar twisted, trying to get his opponent into a sturdy hold while preventing the man from shoving Dalinar over. Dalinar scrambled, his muscles taut, his fingers slipping on his opponent's skin. For those frantic moments, he could focus only on the match, his strength against that of his opponent. Sliding his feet, twisting his weight, straining for purchase. There was a purity to the contest, a simplicity that he hadn't experienced in what seemed like ages. Auriton pulled Dalinar tight, then managed to twist, tripping Dalinar over his hip. They went to the mat, and Dalinar grunted, raising his arm to his neck to prevent a chokehold, turning his head. Old training prompted him to twist and writhe before the opponent could get a good grip on him. Too slow. It had been years since he'd done this regularly. The other man moved with Dalinar's twist, foregoing the attempt at a chokehold, instead getting Dalinar under the arms from behind and pressing him down, face against the mat, his weight on top of Dalinar. Dalinar growled, and by instinct reached out for that extra reserve he'd always had. The pulse of the fight, the edge, the thrill. Soldiers spoke of it in the quiet of the night over campfires. That battle rage unique to the Alethi. Some called it the power of their ancestors, others the true mindset of the soldier. It had driven the Sunmaker to glory. It was the open secret of Alethi success. No, Dalinar stopped himself from reaching for it, but he needn't have worried. He couldn't remember feeling the thrill in months, and the longer he'd been apart from it, the more he'd begun to recognize that there was something profoundly wrong about the thrill. So he gritted his teeth and struggled, cleanly and fairly, with his opponent. And got pinned. Auriton was younger, more practiced at this style of fight. Dalinar didn't make it easy, but he was on the bottom, lacked leverage, and simply wasn't as young as he'd once been. Auriton twisted him over, and before too long, Dalinar found himself pressed to the mat, shoulders down, completely immobilized. Dalinar knew he was beaten, but couldn't bring himself to tap out. Instead, he strained against the hold, teeth gritted, and sweat pouring down the sides of his face. He became aware of something, not the thrill, but stormlight in the pocket of his uniform trousers, lying beside the ring. Auriton grunted, arms like steel. Dalinar smelled his own sweat, the rough cloth of the mat. His muscles protested the treatment. He knew he could seize the stormlight power, but his sense of fairness protested at the mere thought. Instead, he arched his back, holding his breath and heaving with everything he had, then twisted, trying to get back on his face for the leverage to escape. His opponent shifted, then groaned, and Dalinar felt the man's grip slipping slowly.
"Oh, for storm's sake," a feminine voice said. "Dalinar?"
Dalinar's opponent let go immediately, backing away. Dalinar twisted, puffing from exertion, to find Navani standing outside the ring with arms folded. He grinned at her, then stood up and accepted a light Takama overshirt and towel from an aide. As Aratan Kal retreated, Dalinar raised a fist to him and bowed his head, a sign that Dalinar considered Aratan the victor.
"Well played, son. An honor, sir."
Dalinar threw on the Takama, turning to Navani and wiping his brow with the towel.
"Come to watch me spar?"
"Yes, what every wife loves," Navani said. "Seeing that in his spare time her husband likes to roll around on the floor with half-naked, sweaty men."
She glanced at Aratan.
"Shouldn't you be sparring with men closer to your own age?"
"On the battlefield," Dalinar said, "I don't have the luxury of choosing the age of my opponent. Best to fight at a disadvantage here to prepare."
He hesitated, then said more softly, "I think I almost had him anyway."
"Your definition of almost is particularly ambitious, Gem Heart."
Dalinar accepted a waterskin from an aide. Though Navani and her aides weren't the only women in the room, the others were ardents. Navani, in her bright yellow gown, still stood out like a flower on a barren stone field. As Dalinar scanned the chamber, he found that many of the ardents, not just the swordmasters, failed to meet his gaze. And there was Kadash, his former comrade in arms, speaking with the swordmasters. Nearby, Aratan was receiving congratulations from his friends. Pinning the Blackthorn was considered quite the accomplishment. The young man accepted their praise with a grin, but he held his shoulder and winced when someone slapped him on the back.
"I should have tapped out," Dalinar thought.
Pushing the contest had endangered them both. He was annoyed at himself. He'd specifically chosen someone younger and stronger, then became a poor loser? Getting older was something he needed to accept, and he was kidding himself if he actually thought this would help him on the battlefield. He'd given away his armor, no longer carried a shard blade. When exactly did he expect to be fighting in person again?
"The man with 9 shadows."
The water suddenly tasted stale in his mouth. He'd been expecting to fight the enemy's champion himself, assuming he could even make the contest happen to their advantage. But wouldn't assigning the duty to someone like Kaladin make far more sense?
"Well," Navani said, "you might want to throw on a uniform. The Aeriali Queen is ready."
"The meeting isn't for a few hours."
"She wants to do it now. Apparently her court tide reader saw something in the waves that means an earlier meeting is better. She should be contacting us any minute."
Storming Aeriali. Still, they had an oath gate. 2, if you counted the one in the kingdom of Rira, which Eri had sway over. Among Eri's 3 monarchs, currently 2 kings and a queen, the latter had authority over foreign policy, so she was the one they needed to talk to.
"I'm fine with moving up the time," Dalinar said.
"I'll await you in the writing chamber."
"Why?" Dalinar said, waving a hand. "It's not like she can see me. Set up here."
"Here,"
Navani said flatly.
"Here,"
Dalinar said, feeling stubborn. "I've had enough of cold chambers, silent save for the scratching of reeds." Navani raised an eyebrow at him, but ordered her assistants to get out their writing materials. A worried Ardent came over, perhaps trying to dissuade her, but after a few firm orders from Navani, he went running to get her a bench and table. Dalinar smiled and went to select 2 training swords from a rack near the swordmasters. Common longswords of unsharpened steel. He tossed one to Kadash, who caught it smoothly, but then placed it in front of him with point down, resting his hands on the pommel.
"Bright Lord," Kadash said, "I would prefer to give this task to another, as I don't particularly feel..."
"Tough," Dalinar said. "I need some practice, Kadash. As your master, I demand you give it to me."
Kadash stared at Dalinar for a protracted moment, then let out an annoyed huff and followed Dalinar to the ring.
I won't be much of a match for you, Bright Lord. I have dedicated my years to scripture, not the sword. I was only here to
check up on me, I know. Well, maybe I'll be rusty too. I haven't fought with a common longsword in decades. I always had something better.
Yes, I remember when you first got your blade. The world itself trembled on that day, Dalinar Cullen.
Don't be melodramatic, Dalinar said. I was merely one in a long line of idiots given the ability to kill people too easily.
Ryle hesitantly counted the start to the match, and Dalinar rushed in swinging. Kadash rebuffed him competently, then stepped to the side of the ring.
Pardon, Bright Lord, but you were different from the others. You were much, much better at the killing part.
I always have been, Dalinar thought, rounding Kadash.
It was odd to remember the Ardent as one of his elites. They hadn't been close then. They'd only become so during Kadash's years as an Ardent. Navani cleared her throat.
Hate to interrupt this stick-wagging, she said, but the Queen is ready to speak with you, Dalinar.
Great, he said, not taking his eyes off Kadash. Read me what she says.
While you're sparring?
Sure.
He could practically feel Navani roll her eyes. He grinned, coming in at Kadash again. She thought he was being silly. Perhaps he was. He was also failing. One at a time, the world's monarchs were shutting him out. Only Taravangian of the Carbranth, known to be slow-witted, had agreed to listen to him. Dalinar was doing something wrong. In an extended war campaign, he'd have forced himself to look at his problems from a new perspective. Bring in new officers to voice their ideas. Try to approach battles from different terrain. Dalinar clashed blades with Kadash, smashing metal against metal.
High Prince, Navani read as he fought, it is with wondrous awe at the grandeur of the One that I approach you. The time for the world to undergo a glorious new experience has arrived.
Glorious, Your Majesty? Dalinar said, swiping at Kadash's leg. The man dodged back. Surely you can't welcome these events?
All experience is welcome, came the reply. We are the One experiencing itself. And this new storm is glorious even if it brings pain.
Dalinar grunted, blocking a backhand from Kadash. Swords rang loudly.
I hadn't realized, Navani noted, that she was so religious.
Pagan superstition, Kadash said, sliding back across the mat from Dalinar. At least the Azish have the decency to worship the heralds, although they blasphemously place them above the Almighty. The Iriali are no better than Shin Shamans.
I remember, Kadash, Dalinar said, when you weren't nearly so judgmental.
I've been informed that my laxness might have served to encourage you.
I always found your perspective to be refreshing.
He stared right at Kadash, but spoke to Navani.
Tell her, Your Majesty, as much as I welcome a challenge, I fear the suffering these new experiences will bring. We must be unified in the face of the coming dangers.
Unity, Kadash said softly. If that is your goal, Dalinar, then why do you seek to rip apart your own people?
Navani started writing. Dalinar drew closer, passing his longsword from one hand to the other.
How do you know, Kadash? How do you know the Iriali are the pagans?
Kadash frowned. Though he wore the square beard of an Ardent, that scar on his head wasn't the only thing that set him apart from his fellows. They treated swordplay like just another art. Kadash had the haunted eyes of a soldier. When he dueled, he kept watch to the sides in case someone tried to flank him. An impossibility in a solo duel, but all too likely on a battlefield.
How can you ask that, Dalinar?
Because it should be asked, Dalinar said. You claim the Almighty is God. Why?
Because he simply is.
That isn't good enough for me, Dalinar said,
realizing for the first time it was true.
Not anymore.
The Ardent growled, then leaped in, attacking with real determination this time. Dalinar danced backward, fending him off, as Navani read, loudly,
High Prince, I will be frank. The Iriale Triumvirate is in agreement. Alethkar has not been relevant in the world since the Sunmaker's fall. The power of the ones who control the New Storm, however, is undeniable. They offer gracious terms.
Dalinar stopped in place, dumbfounded.
You'd side with the Voidbringers? He asked toward Navani, but then was forced to defend himself from Kadash, who hadn't let up.
What? Kadash said, clanging his blade against Dalinar's. Surprised someone is willing to side with evil, Dalinar? That someone would pick darkness, superstition, and heresy instead of the Almighty's light?
I am not a heretic.
Dalinar slapped Kadash's blade away, but not before the Arden scored a touch on Dalinar's arm. The hit was hard, and though the swords were blunted, that would bruise for certain.
You just told me you doubted the Almighty, Kadash said. What is left after that?
I don't know, Dalinar said.
He stepped closer.
I don't know, and that terrifies me, Kadash. But honor spoke to me, confessed that he was beaten.
The princes of the Voidbringers, Kadash said, were said to be able to blind the eyes of men, to send them lies, Dalinar.
He rushed in, swinging, but Dalinar danced back, retreating around the rim of the dueling ring.
My people,
Navani said, reading a reply from the Queen of Eerie,
do not want war. Perhaps the way to prevent another desolation is to let the Voidbringers take what they wish. From our histories, sparse though they are, it seems that this was the one option men never explored. An experience from the one we rejected.
Navani looked up, obviously as surprised to read the words as Dalinar was to hear them. The pen kept writing.
Beyond that, she added, we have reasons to distrust the word of a thief, High Prince Colin.
Dalinar groaned. So that was what this was all about. Adolin's shard plate. Dalinar glanced at Navani.
Find out more. Try to console them?
She nodded and started writing. Dalinar gritted his teeth and charged Kadash again. The Ardent caught his sword, then grabbed his Takama with his free hand, pulling him close, face to face.
The Almighty is not dead, Kadash hissed. One should have counseled me. Now you glare at me. What happened to the Ardent I knew? A man who had lived a real life, not just watched the world from high towers and monasteries.
He's frightened, Kadash said softly, that he's somehow failed in his most solemn duty to a man he deeply admires. They met eyes, their swords still locked, but neither one actually trying to push the other. For a moment, Dalinar saw in Kadash the man he'd always been, the gentle, understanding model of everything good about the Borin Church.
Give me something to take back to the curates of the church, Kadash pled. Recant your insistence that the Almighty is dead. If you do that, I can make them accept the marriage. Kings have done worse and retained Vorin support.
Dalinar set his jaw, then shook his head.
Dalinar. Falsehoods serve nobody, Kadash, Dalinar said, pulling back. If the Almighty is dead, then pretending otherwise is pure stupidity. We need real hope, not faith in lies.
Around the room, more than a few men had stopped their bouts to watch or listen. The swordmasters had stepped up behind Navani, who was still exchanging some politic words with the Iriale Queen.
Don't throw out everything we've believed because of a few dreams, Dalinar, Kadash said. What of our society? What of tradition?
Tradition, Dalinar said.
Kadash, did I ever tell you about my first sword trainer?
No, Kadash said, frowning, glancing at the other Ardens. Was it Rembrunner? Dalinar shook his head.
Back when I was young, our branch of the Colin family didn't have grand monasteries and beautiful practice grounds. My father found a teacher for me from two towns over. His name was Harth. Young fellow. Not a true swordmaster, but good enough. He was very focused on proper procedure, and wouldn't let me train until I'd learned how to put on a takama the right way.
Dalinar gestured at the Takama shirt he was wearing. He wouldn't have stood for me fighting like this. You put on the skirt, then the overshirt, then you wrap your cloth belt around yourself 3 times and tie it. I always found that annoying. The belt was too tight, wrapped 3 times. You had to pull it hard to get enough slack to tie the knot. The first time I went to the jewels at a neighboring town, I felt like an idiot. Everyone else had long, drooping belt ends at the front of their takamas. I asked Hearth why we did it differently. He said it was the right way, the true way. So when my travels took me to Hearth's hometown, I searched out his master, a man who had trained with the Ardents in Kolinar. He insisted that this was the right way to tie a takama, as he'd learned from his master. By now, they'd drawn an even larger crowd. Kadash frowned. And the point? I found my master's master's master in Kolinar after we captured it, Dalinar said. The ancient wizened Ardent was eating curry and flatbread, completely uncaring of who ruled the city. I asked him, why tie your belt 3 times when everyone else thinks you should do it 2x? The old man laughed and stood up. I was shocked to see that he was terribly short. If I only tie it 2x, he exclaimed. The ends hang down so low, I trip. The chamber fell silent. Nearby, one soldier chuckled, but quickly cut himself off. None of the Ardents seemed amused. I love tradition, Dalinar said to Kadash. I've fought for tradition. I make my men follow the codes. I uphold born virtues. But merely being tradition does not make something worthy, Kadash. We can't just assume that because something is old, it is right. He turned to Navani.
She's not listening, Navani said. She insists you are a thief, not to be trusted.
Your Majesty, Dalinar said, I am led to believe that you would let nations fall and men be slaughtered because of a petty grievance from the past. If my relations with the Kingdom of Rira are prompting you to consider supporting the enemies of all humankind, then perhaps we could discuss a personal reconciliation first. Navani nodded at that, though she glanced at the people watching and cocked an eyebrow. She thought all this should have been done in private. Well, perhaps she was right. At the same time, Dalinar felt he'd needed this. He couldn't explain why. He raised his sword to Kadash in a sign of respect. Are we done here? In response, Kadash came running at him, sword raised. Dalinar sighed, then let himself get touched on the left, but ended the exchange with his weapon leveled at Kadash's neck. That's not a valid dueling strike, the Ardent said. I'm not much of a duelist these days. The Ardent grunted, then shoved away Dalinar's weapon and lunged at him. Dalinar, however, caught Kadash's arm, then spun the man with his own momentum. He slammed Kadash down to the ground and held him there. The world is ending, Kadash, Dalinar said. I can't simply rely on tradition. I need to know why. Convince me. Offer me proof of what you say.
You shouldn't need proof in the Almighty. You sound like your niece.
I'll take that as a compliment.
What? What of the heralds? Kadash said. Do you deny them, Dalinar? They were servants of the Almighty, and their existence proved his. They had power.
Power? Dalinar said. Like this? He sucked in stormlight. Murmuring rose from those watching as Dalinar began to glow, then did something else. Commanded the light. When he rose, he left Kadash stuck to the ground in a pool of radiance that held him fast, binding him to the stone. The Ardent wriggled, helpless.
The Knights Radiant have returned, Dalinar said. And yes, I accept the authority of the Heralds. I accept that there was a being once named Honor, the Almighty. He helped us, and I would welcome his help again. If you can prove to me that Vornism as it currently stands is what the Heralds taught, we will speak again.
He tossed his sword aside and stepped up to Navani.
Nice show, she said softly. That was for the room, Not just Kadash, I assume?
The soldiers need to know where I stand in relation to the church. What does our queen say?
Nothing good, she muttered. She says you can contact her with arrangements for the return of the stolen goods, and she'll consider.
Storming woman, Dalinar said. She's after Adolin's shard plate. How valid is her claim?
Not very, Navani said. You got that through marriage, and to a light eyes from Rira, not Eerie. Yes, the Eriali claim their sister nation as a vassal, but even if the claim weren't disputed, the queen doesn't have any actual relation to Evie or her brother.
Dalinar grunted. Rira was never strong enough to try to claim the plate back, but if it will bring Eerie to our side, then I'd consider it. Maybe I can agree to...
He trailed off.
Wait. What did you say?
Navani said. About... Oh, right. You can't hear her name.
Say it again, Dalinar whispered.
What?
Navani said.
Evie?
Memories blossomed in Dalinar's head. He staggered, then slumped against the writing table, feeling as if he'd been struck by a hammer to the head. Navani called for physicians, implying his dueling had overtaxed him. That wasn't it. Instead, it was the burning in his mind, the sudden shock of a word spoken. Evie. He could hear his wife's name. And he suddenly remembered her face.